Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Michael Bauer, Nick Kalm, Dave Lundy, Chris Roebling, and James Davis. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. If you want to tweet me a comment, it's @Dumo, @D-U-M-O. And, of course, you can join us on the World Wide Web, audio and video, each and every Sunday night, and even past broadcasts beyond thebeltway.com. And tonight, there are 67 days to go to the inauguration day, or 66 more days, I guess, to the presidency of Barack Obama. We have so much to talk about this evening. And again, I want to mention to you, wherever you're listening around the country, we would really like to get your input. We have great guests this evening. They are on different sides of the political aisle. They will offer their assessment. We really want your assessment as well. And I was going to do something a little bit later, but Fritz Coleman, our director, hopefully he's picking up on this. I'm going to do it now. You will recall that for a long, long time, every Sunday night, we would put up a graphic that said who I thought was going to be president of the United States. But something happened on November 1st of last year, where we changed up that graphic a little bit, and we are going to play that both for the radio and TV audience right now. By the way, I want to mention that for the last couple of weeks, I have made my list and shared with you who I thought could be elected president of the United States. And last week, I got a couple of emails after the broadcast and said, Bruce, you're only mentioning the Republicans that you think can be elected president of the United States. So I'm going to change my graphic for those watching us on television tonight and say, I will say again, here are the three people who I think can be elected president of the United States: Hillary Clinton, Marco Rubio, and yes, Donald Trump. I think Donald Trump can go all the way. Those are the only three that I think can make it all the way to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And you disagree. You still don't buy that Trump could pull it off.
No way. No way. Absolutely not.
Joining us tonight.
With egg clearly wiped off his face very quickly.
Yeah, get that egg off your face.
Is Dave Lundy. So, Dave, I want to turn to you first. You're a card-carrying Democrat. You have been one of our favorite Democrats. You've been here several times a month over the last 18 months. So what is your assessment of why you were so wrong?
Oh, no, I was absolutely right. Donald Trump was not elected president.
Oh, wait, sorry. I feel like Bobby in Dallas. It was all just a dream, just a bad dream.
What happened?
Well, first of all, I would be remiss if I did not say that Hillary Clinton will wind up winning about 2 million more votes than Donald Trump.
I 2 million?
Okay, no.
We'll get to that later.
But because there are millions uncounted in California she's winning by 30 points. In any event, it's right now 600,000 and rising.
Okay.
So that's number one. Number two, honestly, I could not have imagined in a million years that her campaign at the most critical time would take their eye off the ball. And so, look, we can get into this, and I could say Comey, and I could say misogyny, and all of those things are true when you have a razor-thin
election.
No, they are true when you have a razor-thin election.
But
fundamentally, this was a winnable race. She got more votes, and they failed miserably to keep their eye on the ball in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania.
Chris Roebling is
our
card-carrying
Republican. She's qualified to be president, right? She's forgetting about Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. That means she's the person to be president of the United States. I mean, it's just laughable.
But
I mean, she was out of gas from before.
Did you see it coming?
Yeah, I've been predicting Trump for months.
I
predicted 40 states and didn't get that far. But I do want to say, I did predict Trump on the Monday before the Tuesday. David and I were on talking publicly. And I just want to say about Hillary Clinton, this is why I said also, and I was wrong, I said for 16 or 18 months that the Democrats would not nominate Hillary Clinton. because she showed no signs of having learned any lessons from the failed 2008 campaign. And because everybody in town knew she had all of this six cars of baggage to carry through the campaign from the Clinton Foundation, et cetera, et cetera.
Michael Bauer is our other Democrat. You were supportive of Hillary Clinton,
yes.
But you were also critical of her campaign as it was happening.
Yes, and critical also of her as a candidate. That being said, I will tell you, Wednesday morning, Tuesday evening as the evening went on, and to Wednesday morning.
And it was your birthday.
It was my birthday on Tuesday.
Happy birthday.
And I was increasingly in disbelief as the election results were coming in. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to disagree from my friend Dave Lundy a little bit. You know, although the media loves to play with the popular vote issue, the fact is the presidency is decided by electoral votes. The candidates campaign on electoral votes. Donald Trump instinctively, I think, saw something going on in places like Wisconsin and in Minnesota, which he almost took.
Mm-hmm.
You know, states where I think someone like me certainly thought that there was nothing going on. And I have to tell you, I think Donald Trump is one of the more brilliant political minds of my lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nick Kamm also joins us. He's a Republican. Nick, you're back with a big smile on your face.
Well,
you always believe. You were a believer.
I was a believer. I had reason to doubt, including on election night, until about 11 or 11:30 at night. But clearly, we should have known that when Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton went to Michigan, of all things, the day before Election Day, that it was going to be in trouble. The night of election night, when we saw that Virginia was barely going for Hillary with Kane as the running mate,
right.
We should have seen it. But I think
And the felons all voting.
Right. That helped.
They got
sure.
The felons out for Hillary.
Absolutely.
Because the criminals vote.
She won by 200,000 votes, Chris. Thanks.
All right. So, but again, getting back to your point about because there are people say, well, but she won the popular vote. What does it mean to govern that one candidate wins the popular vote and Donald Trump is the president-elect of the United States, Dave? What does it mean in a political sense?
Well, in a political sense, you saw immediately Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell saying, we have a mandate, we have a mandate. And I don't know how you have a mandate when you got 2 million fewer votes. If that's
called winning.
It's called 300 electoral
called
votes.
No.
306.
No, that's not a mandate. That's
yeah,
a victory.
Is.
That's
it's
not
called
a mandate.
It's called winning.
Go ahead.
No, the point is that...
Okay, we win, so we're not going to do what we promised.
Let's let Dave respond.
You guys may
we
not...
We win.
You
guys, don't
Chris, let's
we
let Dave
clearly
respond.
Have forgotten this, and I get that, so I'm okay with that. But we are a democracy, at least a democratic republic, and while we may have an electoral college, normally the person who wins is the one with more votes. And since the fact this is now the second... In the first 200 years, we had this happen twice, and we've now had it happen twice in 16 years. To me, there's some issue here that perhaps we should deal with,
right,
but
now,
that's down the road.
All right, now, let me ask you this. In defining mandate, again, a difference between the electoral vote, which was substantial, and the popular vote, which, again, you think is substantial. The other thing that would happen is the Senate is still Republican. The House is still Republican. Is that not part of the broader mandate to govern that the people who voted, they wanted Republicans to be in control of everything? That's my question. I want to get everybody's response. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border, offering your analysis of campaign 2016.
Historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much, Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
are back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. We were just talking about LeBron James. He did nothing to carry the state of Ohio. Nothing. Nick Comm, you were going to make a point before
yeah.
the break.
Well, I was just going to say, listening to Dave and the Democrats talk about popular vote and the Electoral College and the Constitution, would you guys make up your mind whether you like the Constitution and the Electoral College or don't? Because it seems to change about every couple of years.
When did we decide? Was it 2000 when we really liked the Electoral College?
Well, you've been back and forth about it for
liked
sure.
Liked it in the last 8 months.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why she was
when you thought you were
going to
win
Arizona.
Well, here's my 2 cents. I remember 84. In 1984, President Reagan defeated Walter Mondale up and down and from one side to the other. And I remember explicitly the Democrats coming on after the November election saying, there is no mandate here. There is no mandate. And I'm going to tell you, David, I have yet to hear the Democrats say, you know what? We lost. He won. He gets to go forward. As Barack Obama said, quote, elections have consequences, period.
You know what's significant, though? What's significant, just 1 second, about this whole mandate thing. You know who's not talking about it as a mandate? Donald Trump.
Donald Trump.
He is not talking about it as a mandate.
Donald Trump can't figure out where he's going.
No, no, no. That's not why.
Oh, boy, are you wrong on that.
Listen to his acceptance speech. Listen to what he said there, the signals he's sending. I'm wondering if the Democrats are smart enough to realize that they've got the most co-optable president in office now that they've had in 20 years. But instead, you're going to vilify him. You're making him sound like the Antichrist. And he's a very thin-skinned person, as we know. You are losing any opportunity you have to have a voice in the process, even though he's not voicing mandate once.
Many Democrats were even saying that Donald Trump is a Democrat. During the
He was
a Democrat.
He was until
and
5 years ago.
And the point is, as I've said, he is going to govern like Nixon. I'm not talking about the
Watergate. Actually,
Watergate.
I think your comparison is apt.
No. But what I'm talking about is he's going to reach out and he's going to be doing a lot of different things to a lot of different people because he's going to be able to get away with it. He comes to the White House with less ideological string than anyone else in the history.
Well, he owes nothing politically to anybody. Right. That's what's so refreshing about this. I think Donald Trump actually, and I've didn't vote for him, and I'm deeply, deeply.
You were a never Trumper.
I was a never Trumper for about one half of an afternoon, and I reconsidered. But I want to tell you something. You look at him now, and you look at the mandate. Mandate. Okay.
Let's again for those watching us. We have a graphic on that. Oh. This is the red.
There you go.
For those who are watching on television, all the red are counties
yeah.
in the United States. Won by Donald Trump.
And there's this whole semicircle that starts in Montana and goes all the way up to New York, upstate New York.
Again, people will argue there's a lot of people that don't live there, but again, it is also flyover country.
Those are counties that changed. And this is another one of these Democratic shibboleths. You know, oh, everybody's a racist, everybody's a misogynist, everybody's anti-Muslim. And 4 years ago, there are 700 counties on that map that went for Barack Obama. So what? In
they
the
stopped
last
being
four
racist.
Years, because
they
of the leadership
being racist again. Yeah.
Yeah, because of the leadership of Barack Obama and Valerie Jarrett, they're now racist.
Yeah, they
is
stopped
that
for
the
a
idea?
While. They stopped.
Actually, one of the things that we have discussed in another environment very recently,
yes,
an issue that I raised, is one of the interesting things about the 2016 race is trying to define the voters, and there are millions of them who voted for Barack Obama in 2008, and in 2012. And yet voted for Donald Trump in 2016. There are millions of those voters, and it's an interesting demographic.
Huge!
And I'd love to see an analysis of those voters.
Can I give it to you? Because I think I can speak with some
Please.
Authority.
Okay.
Because you're a...
Change.
Change, yes.
Okay, yes.
Obama was
people,
a change candidate in 2008.
Want change. Right. They want change.
Yeah.
And we've had 8 years of a Democrat. Historically, people like to make a change at that point. So
actually, we not only had 8 years of a Democrat, we have 8 years of a Democrat who campaigned on change,
right?
And then didn't bring much change.
No, he did.
May I please make a citation here?
Quickly.
This is Frank Bruni from today's New York Times. A 64-year-old Southern woman, not on board with marriage equality, now finds herself characterized as a hateful boob. Never mind that Barack and Hillary were not themselves on board with marriage equality just 5 short years ago.
Right.
This is Frank Bruni of the New York Times, and that is the problem with the party I was raised in, the Democratic Party. You're judgmental, you're divisive, you are doctrinaire, and you're arrogant. Not you personally. You're a great guy. But the entire
the rest of you, Democrats.
Whatever the heck it is you represent, it's awful.
It's not Dave. It's you people.
No, it's not you, but your people.
Okay.
I want to make a very important point
because I think that as much as there is the change issue, they wanted change when Obama promised it, and then they hated him for it because they didn't like the change that he brought.
Right.
So that's number one. Number two.
Exactly.
I think that the fundamental failure of Hillary Clinton in this campaign, and I said this 10 months ago, was the failure to recognize the genuine economic anxieties in middle and working class America. And had she done something like I had suggested back in February and embrace the notion that she would be a fighter for the middle class, she would have won this election overwhelmingly. She never did that, and so they never acknowledged and understood that she was a fighter for them, and said she's an elitist.
She also didn't listen to her husband's advice.
No, exactly, because Bill Clinton understood this issue better than anybody.
But I thought she was the most qualified candidate for president.
She's the most experienced, most qualified.
Excuse me, qualified is not the same thing as politically smart.
I mean, she's despicable, David. She's despicable.
She's not despicable.
To get to this level and to not be prepared and to ignore Wisconsin, to ignore Michigan, to almost lose Minnesota, what does it take to be despicable? She destroyed 35,000 government emails that are owned by us.
You're dumbing down despicable.
I'm sorry.
You're dumbing down despicable. You'll have an opportunity for despicable in the next 4 years.
Michael, a question to you.
Okay.
Hillary Clinton has yesterday blamed, she blamed the FBI.
Yes.
She blamed the FBI director. Had Comey not done it, she thought that she would have won.
Yeah.
Is that just another example that she has a tin ear and doesn't really get what happened?
I don't know whether it's a 10-year. Listen, she's 5 days after losing the election, an election that she not only thought she was going to win, but everyone both supporting her and opposing, a lot of people opposing her thought that she was going to win. So she's got to be in a little bit of shell shock. Let's grant her that.
So we should.
And in shell shock, you know, part of it is you got to look for someone to blame. All right?
Because yourself.
It's very difficult to stand up and say, I blame, first of all, myself because I was an inadequate candidate. And I blame my campaign because they never did a good job in coming up with a message for me or in coming up with a good strategy on where I should actually be campaigning.
But they were more worried about Moscow than they should have been more worried about Milwaukee.
We get to worry about Moscow in the next four years
since the Kremlin today said that they feel we're going to have a much closer relationship with the United States because Donald Trump embraces most of Russia's views on foreign policy.
No, but Democrats were saying for years, right, that the Republicans needed to do that serious self-examination to reach out, the autopsy after the last election, and it never happened. And they said, going in, you're supporting a misogynist, a racist, all that. Didn't work out that way. My question to the Democrats is, when is your true self-examination going to begin? I get that 5 days is too soon, but how soon is it going to happen?
No, Nick, I disagree with you. I don't think 5 days is too soon. I think there's already very vibrant discussion going on in the Democratic Party about what is the Democratic Party, who do we stand for, and frankly, who do we want to be our leaders?
So, and because, along
because
those
frankly,
lines,
I will tell you an example. I think someone like Nancy Pelosi, who has been the minority leader, has got to go.
Yeah. So, who are they talking about? Yeah.
She can raise a ton of money,
right?
But she can't win control of the House.
But who are they talking about? No, they're talking about Keith Ellison to be the head of the DNC, one of the most liberal.
No. He's a radical.
Okay, radical.
He isn't a liberal.
Let's find out if our Democrats support Keith Ellison.
No, I want to see Howard Dean. Howard Dean was a phenomenal chairman of the Democratic Party. Right. He paved the way for 2006 to happen. Rahm got all the credit, but the fact is he did a good job candidate recruiting, but it was Howard Dean that built the state parties. Hmm. I want Howard Dean back, plus he would be a full-time chair. I do not support Keith Ellison.
I also have to tell you, Governor Martin O'Malley is interested in becoming DNC chair.
Okay.
Has thrown his hat in the ring, and I think he'd be an interesting chair for the party. I don't think Keith Ellison is the right guy.
By the way, we're going to go to calls. Tom and Barrington, go ahead. You're listening to us on the radio. Go ahead. You're watching on the web tonight. Go ahead. Tom, are you there?
Show so far.
Go ahead.
I'm relishing the fact that the Democrats are just in such disarray. And to the Democrats there, they need to be reminded we are a representative republic, not a democracy. So you definitely want to read the Constitution. I know you guys want to redefine it as you have marriage, as it comes from the Bible. I'll tell you, besides the outcome, the best, the other outcome or collateral effect of this election was showing the Democrats through WikiLeaks and Project Veritas.
Yes, yes.
How dirty they are.
Arrogant.
And a party of the ends justify the means.
Condescending.
And it's shameful. And I hope that they have their come to Jesus or Allah moment and look at themselves and say, you know what, we need to get back to representing people and not the party.
Spare me. I'm sorry. This idea.
Dave.
I promise you, if you saw the emails going back and forth between in Donald Trump's campaign in the Republican Party, you'd see the same thing. There was nothing in those emails that was special for the, except for people who've never seen what campaign emails look like.
I have never seen emails like that, and I've been in this business for 40 years. Is a consistent tone of arrogance and really condescension towards the voters.
Absolutely.
And that is the entire affect of the National Democratic Party since 1972.
And the media.
And the media, which is just a wing of the Democratic Party.
82-9, 1-800-723-8289. Lots of calls. We'll bring them back when we roll on from Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us tonight.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Sundays at 10:30 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
That's true.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8289. We have one more clip. You know, we do the show from the Museum of Broadcast Communications. We have lots of tape lying around. Here's another little piece of tape we found.
Uh-oh.
This from an interview I did with my good friend Ken Davis on Chicago Newsroom. This interview was done on July 28th, right after the Republican convention. There's yours truly talking about the politics of what might happen. At this particular point in time, I believe that Donald Trump will be elected president of the United States. As of this moment in time, yes. I then went on to say that it was because of Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Michigan and Trump's focus on those areas that would lead him to victory, and that the people who I had met at the Republican convention in Cleveland represented an entirely and a broader base of people than I normally run into living in the city of Chicago. And I will say, you know, we do this program from one of the bluest cities in one of the bluest states now. We're like New York and Los Angeles. So we try to break through that with Beyond the Beltway every Sunday night, and that's why I love to surround myself with people who disagree with me, because for the most part, many of the people who are at this table, many of them do not run into people that disagree with them a lot.
Point of personal privilege.
Yes.
So since the first clip was about me, I just have to remind you, Bruce, that it was also on this show that you assured America that Rand Paul would be the Republican nominee for president.
That is correct.
And that I told you that would never happen.
That
so,
is correct.
You know.
Dave is trying not to get invited back
Dave
ever.
Dave is right some of the time.
Dave. We don't have time to save all the tape. We just don't have the space to save
or find all the tape.
No, we can't find it.
But may I please,
Chris,
it's right into this.
Okay.
All right, my point is a college classmate of mine, Debbie Inslee, who ended up marrying Congressman Dingell and became Debbie Dingell, has been reciting her history of this year, and she is a faithful. I think probably moderate liberal Democrat congressperson from the Michigan. What used to be the auto producing area of Michigan.
Yes.
Okay. And she has said, if she said it once, she said it a dozen times, that she had an analysis of the Obama administration not connecting with her voters up in Michigan. And she took it she said, quote, every chance I got, I mentioned it to President Obama, or I would see Michelle and I would mention it to her. They always said, we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that. She would see Hillary. Hillary would say, we're going to get to it. Never got to it. And this is exactly why Bruce was finding Republicans at the convention who were connected to Pennsylvania, Ohio, Indiana, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and saying, what's going on? And now just one other quick point. Jim Webb said, I want to be a representative for the American working class, and that's where the Democrats belong. And I don't think anybody in the Democratic Party is focused on that. Look at how prophetic he looks today.
He could go in the cabin. He could be the Democrat in the cabin.
But even more, you know who else missed it, Bruce, to your point about that? The Republicans missed it.
Yes.
That's how we ended up with Donald Trump as the nominee and the president-elect, because there was nobody in the party that saw what Trump saw. There was nobody in the Democrat Party that saw it either, in terms of the people in middle America that were hurting, that had been impacted negatively by the economic policies and by trade and everything else. And Republicans threw everything they could in the way of Trump to prevent him from getting the nomination, and he did. And they threw everything they could in the way of getting him the election, and he still won.
The other thing that was happening with the way the media was covered, because during a portion of that campaign, the story was about the violence that was breaking out at Trump rallies. It started at the UFC rally
UIC.
In Chicago, UIC, mm-hmm. that got canceled. And again, I was there, and I also was one of the one in Northern California where it got launched. The other thing was an image situation. Was the violence in the streets, was the pelting of Trump supporters by these demonstrators out front, many of whom were waving Mexican flags. I mean, they don't a lot of the left don't understand that when they see that in a riotous situation, waving a Mexican flag, that's being shown on television. That's being received in red state America or the red counties of America.
And the protests that are going on today,
yes.
that the Democrats are doing, that MoveOn.org is subsidizing,
totally
that these people are paying
okay.
for, paying for, is contributing to the resentment that put Donald Trump in the White
Correct.
House.
Correct.
Absolutely.
Wait,
Michael,
and
let's
still,
talk about the
and nobody is denouncing it. Dave is denouncing it. Obama's not denouncing it. Hillary's not denouncing it. And it goes on.
Listen. First of all, let me say for myself, I have a great faith in the Constitution and a great belief in our constitutional system. Much to my disbelief, Donald Trump won Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. He is the president-elect. I understand that. However, among the other things in the Constitution is the First Amendment, the right of assembly for nonviolent protesters.
Amen.
They're not nonviolent.
Amen.
No, wait. Many of the protesters have been nonviolent. There have been incidents of violence in places like Portland, and that's to be condemned and is unacceptable
and they're
in
anarchists.
Our society.
They're
and anarchists.
Right.
And they're anarchists.
Right.
But many of these protests have been nonviolent, and that's the right of people to express themselves at their unhappiness. Now,
no one's saying
I
they don't
there?
Have a right to do it. But it's what is the political impact of it? It is further solidifying the people who said they didn't like that there was riots in the street all the time. Black Lives Matters all the time. You don't think that contributed to Trump winning?
No one,
it absolutely did.
No one should denounce other people expressing themselves in accordance with the First Amendment, time, place, manner, and et cetera, et cetera. That's great. That's great. That's right. America. We love that. But this, what happened when it was revealed that the Democrats had salted these Trump rallies with folks who were trained to induce violence.
Bob Kramer,
who's a guest
my
on
congressperson,
show.
Jan Schakowsky's husband,
a friend
convicted
of mine,
felon.
A friend of mine is on those videos saying those things, encouraging those actions, much to my regret.
Right.
But the fact is, this is what we've gotten with George Soros taking over the Democratic Party after the so-called reforms of 1972. My point is the party ceased to represent neighborhoods and chose instead to represent causes and movements and special interests. That's what Wayne Wayland did in 1972. He transformed the party in front of itself at the convention. No one understood at the time, and we are dealing As Americans, we're dealing with a Democratic Party that is captive to special interests,
because we
and
need
a Republican Party
that
has
not
to be taken. A Republican Party that has to be taken over by Donald Trump. Because I agree with Nick's analysis, the Republican Party is just as dumb as the Democratic Party.
Good. I'm glad you agree with that. So stop saying it's the Democrats who are captive of special interests, as Donald
Trump,
Mr. We're going to drain the swamp, put in charge of his transition committees in his transition lobbyists for the coal industry, lobbyists for the pharma industry, lobbyists. Mr. Drain the Swamp is taking the, Mr. Drain the Swamp is taking all the insiders that he promised to drain the swamp of and putting them in charge of staffing his administration.
You don't put Steve Bannon in that category, do you?
No, Steve Bannon's just the guy from the alt-right racist movement who's now the chief strategist to the United States of America.
That is a calumny he does not deserve.
It is not a calumny
he doesn't deserve. He is not a racist. He is not a racist.
No, he foments racism.
He does not foment racism.
He absolutely does.
Wait,
Hang on. He declared himself the champion of the alt-right. The alt-right is the white supremacist Nazi movement in this country, period. They're the people who are having a march.
This is where you guys are going bananas.
You need to understand something.
Michael Bauer.
I believe the president-elect has the right to surround himself with who he wants.
Right.
All right? But each candidate that was running on Tuesday recognized there's a huge divide in this country. And each candidate talked about and campaigned about uniting this country. So one of the things that's incumbent on President-elect Trump is to understand how some of those appointments are going over with portions of the population. Now, I will tell you something.
I agree with that.
As someone who is Jewish, I look at Steve Bannon, and he scares me.
But Trump scares you, too.
No, Trump doesn't scare me. Trump makes me nervous. There's a difference. Trump makes me nervous. But Steve Bannon scares me because of his embrace of the alt-right movement. I wish, and by the way,
I will not be a part of anything that is injurious to the status of gays, Muslims, Jews, anybody in America.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Then how are you defending Steve Bannon, Chris?
I've never experienced what you're referring to. I don't believe that it exists.
He said it himself.
The issue here, by the way, for those that may not have heard the news today, Rance Priebus, the former head or the current head of the RNC, he has been named the chief of staff. And I think a lot of people are breathing a little bit lighter tonight because he was given that position because one of the other possibilities was Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon is the chief strategist, the chief counselor. So basically, to put it in sort of in Chicago terms, of the role that Rahm Emanuel once had for Barack Obama is now a role that Rance Priebus will have as the chief of staff to the president and the chief political advisor to Barack Obama early on, who was David Axelrod from Chicago. That's the role that Steve Bannon has. Now, again, regardless of whether he is a racist or not, the perception on one side is that he is. Perception on the other side is that he's not. The point is, he was a brilliant strategist. He was part of this victory coalition. And when you win an election, you generally reward those that got you there. And Steve Bannon got him in the White House.
Now, important point I also want to add, and you've also heard this recently in another forum. I strongly maintain that the vast majority of people who voted for Donald Trump to be president of the United States are in no way racist or anything like that.
Right.
They are people who are frustrated, people who are looking for change, people who thought that he was the proper vehicle for that. And that's their prerogative. Right? So I'm not looking at this as saying this is a racist who's been elected president of the United States.
No, but I will. I want to
pick up their votes.
But let me.
Sorry?
But again, a winning candidate takes the votes of whoever wants to vote for him.
Yes.
Just as the Democratic Party for over 50 years, they took votes from Ku Klux Klan members in the South.
And not
the
only
Solid
that,
South was
I
Democratic because Ku Klux Klan supported the Democratic Party.
Some of the people who voted by the Democratic Party.
Wait, some of the people who voted for Hillary Clinton, I will tell you, I'm highly unsympathetic with. Some of the people from the far left.
We got to pause. 1-800-723-8029. Back shortly from Chicago.
Yeah, when.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create full-edge designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Let me come back.
All right, we are back on the air, and you want to come back, so Nick?
Yes, so what I wanted to say, and actually picks up on what Michael was saying earlier, and I can say this because there's five middle-aged white guys sitting around the table.
Yeah.
I do think it is important.
Thank you for calling me middle-aged. Well,
yes, you're welcome. I think it is really important that one of the next picks that Trump makes has got to be somebody that shows some diversity, either female or minority. It's got to be. If he loads his cabinet up with nothing but middle-aged white guys like around this table, I think that's going to be a big mistake.
We can speculate a little bit, but I want to take some calls. But again, I think Ben Carson, without question, will be in the cabinet.
Secretary of Education or
Health and Human Services.
HHS. Yes.
I hope HHS.
In the next hour. We're going to be joined for a segment by Pastor James Davis. James Davis was part of the coalition to reach out to the African-American community by Donald Trump. He is going to be talking about Donald Trump ended up with about 10% of the African-American vote. And also one of the big stories of this race is that the African-American support for Hillary Clinton was below, significantly below what it was for Barack Obama. And that is one of the contributing factors as to why Barack Obama did not get his wish, because he certainly made a very strong
case. But that's not surprising.
To the African-American community that, you know, it was disrespecting him if the black community did not turn out. But we'll talk about that in the next hour. But let's go to Jane, listening to us in Tinley Park, Illinois, on the Internet tonight. Go ahead, Jane. Nice to have you with us.
Oh, hi, Bruce. Thanks for taking my call. I'm just going to just give you a comment, then I'm going to hang up.
Okay.
Bruce, I want to tell you something. You are the master of the airways. You have excellent guests. Summertime, you had a man named Michael on. Michael had predicted that the race would be decided in the Rust Belts. I believe you'll remember this.
Yes.
I had called you that week and said, Bruce, I had heard on another show another person that had predicted the Rust Belts. Well, and then you had agreed, and you had showed the triangle of Ohio and all those other states. You said, yes, it may be decided there, and the Republican had to win Ohio in order to go on. I just want to say, very, very good.
And thank you. Right. The person that you were referring to was Michael Lotus. Michael has been one of our card-carrying Trumpsters for the last couple of months on this program. I think he was the man that you mentioned. And again, part of this is what I think what frustrates me is that the media and the pollsters so badly miss this race. I've said for almost 16 years on this program, because I've been on the radio on WKBN in Youngstown for about that time, if you draw a 200-mile radius around Youngstown, Ohio, you're going to determine who the president is, and because it's western Pennsylvania,
right,
a little bit of Michigan and Ohio, and that was certainly part of it. And again, by the way, we'll also say that last week, you know, we did this program from Carthage College, mm-hmm, and 50% of the people on the show last week thought that Donald Trump was going to win. 50% of the people last week from Carthage College thought that Hillary Clinton was win. But no one on the program last week thought that Donald Trump was going to win the state of Wisconsin. And that was one of the big surprises. And one of the other big surprises here, which again goes back to mistakes made by Robbie Mook and those that were planning the Hillary Clinton campaign, she never campaigned at all in the state of Wisconsin. Not at all.
Right. Well, Trump must have been listening to you, because he must have known what we were talking about. All right, Bruce.
Thank you very much.
I'm watching you on the Internet. Keep up the good work.
How do you like the beard? For those listening on radio, I'm growing a beard.
I like you, nice, clean shaved. I listen to you. Okay. I start listening to you with when the Bushes start running. And
okay.
I'm a longtime listener, but thank you so much.
You're
again.
Welcome.
Thank you for the good show and entertainment, and you keep up the good work.
Thanks very much.
Bruce, you mentioned pollsters getting it wrong and everybody else getting it wrong. They got it wrong for two reasons. One is because they all live in deeply blue cities, in deeply blue states. And second, they made it but the media and the Democrats and even Republicans made it completely socially unacceptable to publicly admit you were for Trump.
Well, and
that's why they undercounted that, what do they call it, the shy voter, the hidden voter, whatever it was. That's why they completely miscalculated and didn't realize what was happening until late on Election Day.
I want to go back to something, segueing from something the caller said about the president-elect. You know, when you're a candidate, you need certain skills and experiences to be successful. And when you're an elected official, you need certain skills and experiences to be successful. And they're not the same for the candidate or the elected official. Right. They're different skills and experiences. One thing we've seen, and I mentioned this earlier, Donald Trump has turned out to be an absolutely brilliant politician. Mm-hmm. He has his gut level, kind of like, you know, similar to Bill Clinton, mm-hmm. similar to Ronald Reagan. He has this masterful gut level, mm-hmm. all right? And I expect, actually, that that's going to help him in governing, because he knows where he wants to go. I don't know where he wants to go, but I expect he knows where he wants to go.
Mm-hmm. And what does he do? What does he know from his previous life all the way? What has he done over and over again? Make deals. That's the thing. That's the thing nobody realizes.
And surround yourself with smart people.
Exactly.
Well, does he have the ability to listen to them? Now, the other thing, which I viewed as a positive, some view it as a negative, I like the fact that at least during the transition, we're hearing from the kids. I think he has sharp kids. Again, I am concerned about the division between the potential conflict of interest between what's good for the Trump organization. That has to be really thought out well.
There'll be a kitchen cabinet to him, I think.
And that's that, I think, is positive.
Which is okay if they're a kitchen cabinet because they're running his business. So what could possibly go wrong on the conflict front? Look, it was a
Clinton
joke.
Foundation.
You can't divorce your
thing
kids.
That they,
you can only divorce your wives.
No, exactly.
And he's done that.
The way that they...
A few
three
times.
Right. At least twice so far. Look, the way that they talked about the divorce from the Trump organization and how they were going to manage that was non-serious. It still doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And they've got to grapple with that at some point. I hope they do. You know, I'm wondering when he's releasing his tax returns.
He's never.
He's not
the 12th of never.
I got news for you. When Hillary produces those emails, you will see the tax
returns. No, it's just, it's now become,
Hillary
it's
lost,
now,
Trump
it's
is
now become okay for presidential candidates not to release their tax
returns. Well, he made a very important point about this tax thing, which I thought he should have made earlier, and this shows the lack of, you know, the fact he did run a successful campaign and he did a lot of things right. But he made the point late in the game that he disclosed to the federal government more information than has ever been on anybody's tax return when he qualified to do the rehabilitation of the old post office on Pennsylvania Avenue. He said
he had
conveyed pages and pages and pages of financial.
When we come back, we're going to look ahead other possible members of the Trump cabinet. Don't go away.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, But you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Sundays at 10:30 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. We're talking about the election of Donald Trump as the 45th president of the United States, 67 days from today. Let's go to Jason listening to us in Washington, D.C. on Sirius XM satellite radio. Jason, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Bruce, I have no dog in this fight because, you know, of course, I voted Libertarian. But let me just point out a couple of things here. Donald Trump didn't win. Hillary Clinton lost. And, you know, you talk about this thing, you know, when we go back to the racial stuff. Some guy in the KKK gives $50 to Donald Trump, but somehow Hillary Clinton takes millions of dollars from Wall Street, and everybody's supposed to look the other way. And the contempt I have with the media is the fact that so many of these people, I mean, we're seeing stuff that people that write for Politico and The Hill are sending articles to the DNC for approval. Right. We were supposed to have Brian Williams, right? This guy was supposed to be off the air. He's back again. So until the media actually starts clearing house and replacing their supposed journalists with real journalists, the situation is not going to change.
Well, I agree with that, and I think the first positive sign that I saw is that Matthew Dowd, the alleged Republican analyst on ABC,
was fired.
He's been officially fired.
He should be.
He should be. Last week he went well beyond Dave Lundy by saying that it was 99% that Clinton was going to win. And so when the media continues to put people like that up as experts, or when they put Mike Murphy up. Mike Murphy, as a Republican strategist, he hasn't won for about 15 years. Or you bring on Anna Navarro, who's about 30 seconds away from a payroll check from the Bush family. I mean, when you have people like that who literally are presented as Republican strategists, they are incapable.
This is the NPR. We have a Republican, and his name is Kevin Phillips.
Right.
Syndrome.
Right.
NPR was 20 years ahead of the mainstream media, and that's and NPR getting away with Kevin Phillips, who I got to interview at WBEZ, and I said, tell me what element of residual Republicanism exists within you today. And he refused to answer that question. Right.
By the way, let's continue this discussion, but let's bring Kevin from Austin, Texas, into the conversation, because you want to ask about the winners and losers in the media. Do you have some people you'd like to nominate, Kevin?
Well, if you look at – I found it extremely amusing, the whole Comey thing, when he came out and brought some stuff back out, and then he closed it at the end, how they flipped back and forth. Comey's the greatest thing since sliced bread. And then, you know, oh, Comey's so biased. And then when he closed it again, they just – It exposed, I think, to a lot of people how biased they are. So your Deborah Nora O'Donnell's, and a lot of those things. A lot of these people that were named in WikiLeaks. So how is that going to play out? And also, you've got Trump that's going after New York Times right now and their bad coverage. How are those things going to play out?
I would like to say that the media should be getting together and having the conversations about the future of the media, just as the Democrats are getting together to talk about the future of the Democratic Party, looking about where the mistakes were made. I cannot believe that any institution that is held in such low esteem by voters, by people who view television, I cannot believe that the leaders of those organizations, for their own economic goodwill, can't get together and say, you know what, Matthew Dow does not belong. He doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know. He's not up to speed. And go through that list. And by the way, I don't like the idea of anyone who used to be on a campaign who within the last 6 months is suddenly back
that
on
has
again.
Been a travesty.
Including
a travesty.
Corey Lewandowski.
Yeah, that has been a travesty. I mean, look, the media is a disaster, and it is a disaster, I believe, more because it is a captive of the National Democratic Party than because the media has been forced to try to justify itself on a business basis.
And whereas the Democrats probably, maybe, will do that self-examination that needs to happen for them to have any hope of recapturing the Senate or the White House, I don't think the media is going to do it. I think they are just going to continue to spin downwards and have less and less credibility. They are already at an all-time low in terms of their credibility. That was before the election of a week ago.
What happens to the Sunday shows, I guess?
They'll stay because they make money.
I think the Sunday shows should stay, but I think the Sunday shows need a broader bench of people that they go to, including their producers. And by the way, when you talk about a discussion of politics, you generally run the breadth from the New York Times to the Washington Post.
Yeah.
That's about it. And then you'll put somebody in from NPR. Hugh Hewlett is sort of the new conservative du jour used by NBC. I mean, that's about what they do. But they don't. Why is it that part of that panel doesn't include someone from the Kansas City Star,
right,
or from the Minnesota Tribune, or from the San Diego Union, or a host of Beyond the Beltway? Someone that knows a little bit. Well, I mean, as an example, I mean,
seriously.
I'm serious about this. They're incapable of doing it.
They don't want diversity of thought.
Well,
they
don't
want it.
Diversity to them is skin color deep.
Right.
Thank you
is
to the caller.
Yes, say that again.
I'm curious, is Stephanopoulos still going to be around? Or are they going to, you think Medium's going to be smart enough to get rid of some of those?
Here's one point. I think Stephanopoulos will be around. I think he embarrassed himself by being a donor to the Clinton Foundation and having a major position. He does have a major position at ABC. I think he generally does a good job. And generally speaking, I think he tried. Everyone knows where he's coming from. I think he does a better job of trying than, let's say, Chuck Todd. Chuck Todd, has embarrassed the history of that show. And Katie Kerr of NBC, whoever her boss is, they should look at those clips. Every single story she reported on was negative. Every single story.
Their bosses think the same way, Bruce. That's the problem. It goes all the way to the top.
Well,
Katie Kerr, even in my view, crossed the line repeatedly.
Yes,
but all of the media did,
particularly in the last month,
right?
Because she just stopped.
But are you guys as Democrats? I'm curious about this. Are you okay with the complete dispensation of any veneer of objectivity that the media did going into this election?
Look,
how they went after Donald Trump.
Look, you guys,
they weren't even pretending to be objective anymore. Are you guys okay with that?
You guys are going to jump all over my my microphone on this point. But I think that the media's failures were around – they had numerous failures. First of all, I agree with you on Mike Murphy. I'm like, the guy's claim to fame is that he blew $100 million of Jeb Bush's donors.
Yeah.
Really? And you produced – Jeb,
yeah.
With the exclamation point. That's for Eli. Eli loved to say Jeb in my house, my 11-year-old son.
Only credential is that he's a friend of Chuck Todd's. It's the only one.
No, his only credential is that he was a Republican, that he's a friend of the Bushes. But in any event, I think that where the media failed, utterly failed, is in holding Donald Trump accountable, because they would focus on the personal stuff and they wouldn't focus on
holding him accountable.
The complete lack,
when did they ever hold Hillary accountable?
Crucified him. What are you talking
when
about?
When did they hold Hillary accountable? Are you
Never.
Kidding me?
I'm still
look
waiting.
Look at the math. Look at the number of minutes that the media spent on
Do
the
look
email
at it.
Scandal.
Look at it.
Versus
Do look
what they
at
did
it,
on
Dave.
Trump on issues.
Good Dave. Luck.
It was 10-1 on the email scandal.
God. Back shortly from Chicago.
Dave, come on, you don't
it's
believe that.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much, Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Rooster Mott back in Chicago. Go ahead, Chris. Chris, you were about to say something.
I think the media failed from years ago to take Hillary seriously. And if the media had done its job, the Democratic Party would never have nominated her. But because they allowed her to skate on this, I mean, let's start at the very beginning, okay? She didn't even have responsibility for Afghanistan policy at the State Department because it was given to Richard Holbrooke. I mean, she was not the Secretary of State in any substantive or policy.
So she was not the most qualified presidential candidate
ever? Hold on. This is why no one can say she was a great Secretary of State because she did X or Y or Z.
Right.
No one has any blinking idea what she did as Secretary of State because, as Carly Fiorina said, she was flying around. She wasn't accomplishing anything.
She got a lot of
and there was
miles.
Never – hold on a second. There was never any enterprise journalism about her failures as Secretary of State.
Because
I want
to
ask you, Nick, I want to ask you a question. Yeah. Media, I've been clear on my denunciation of the media in this particular case. Would you acknowledge, however, that much of the negative media coverage that Donald Trump received was because of something Donald Trump said?
Yes.
And by doing that and not being able to let go of a bad story and taking a one-day story and making it a seven-day story, that led to this feeding frenzy, this blood in the water shark-like response from the national news.
Absolutely, and it has also led to the literally hysterical reaction that so many Democrats had when the election didn't go their way.
Right.
And why people are so traumatized by it. I've been sitting there scratching my head for a week about it. And yes, I know it's the specter of racism and misogyny and all of
all
that stuff.
A smoke screen.
I understand, and it's all fear. You know, we have nothing to fear but fear itself.
Right.
One of your famous presidents had to say. But I think it
one
directly
of our famous
led to
presidents.
Right. Well, our
one of our famous
our,
presidents.
Our yes.
Our,
yes, right.
One of the
our.
Four great presidents.
Our.
Right. But the other issue is which the media feeds into, and that is the inevitability. A candidate like Hillary Clinton, very
right.
early on,
right.
she was going to be the inevitable candidate.
Yes.
So much so
yes,
that,
inevitable.
Again, we have the superdelegates, which is one thing I hope part of the reforms that come out of the parties is that we do away with superdelegates. Because I want to ask you this question. If Bernie Sanders had been the nominee, do you think we would be talking about President-elect Bernie Sanders tonight, Michael Bauer?
I don't think so. I think actually, if Bernie Sanders had been the nominee, we would highly likely be talking about President-elect Michael Bloomberg, because Michael Bloomberg would have jumped in the race and would have taken over the center position in the race.
What do you think of that question?
I'm just thinking of President-elect Bloomberg. Soda taxes for everyone. Sorry.
Electable.
Look, I think Bernie Sanders was unelectable. I think
Bernie
that,
Sanders was unelectable. I agree.
Yeah, I do too.
Let me tell you, just because earlier in the show we played the clip on November 1st of 2015 I would have not put Bernie Sanders in the list of those who could be elected. I think had Bernie Sanders been in this race, we would not have been talking about lower turnouts in certain areas.
No.
We would not have been talking about the loss of the Rust Belt. I think we would have been talking about President-elect Bernie Sanders.
Okay.
Okay.
Can I just raise an issue that, yes. that we kind of glossed over, similar to the media? We were talking about Hillary Clinton's tenure as Secretary of State for 4 years.
Right.
One of the things that fascinated me, and I was not an enthusiastic Hillary Clinton supporter because of her 4 years as Secretary of State, and I expected this to be an issue, first of all, in the Democratic primary. Interestingly to me, Bernie Sanders never raised the issue. It was incumbent upon him as her opponent, right. and he never made it an issue.
He skated on the emails. He skated on Secretary of State.
Okay. And in the general election, Donald Trump never really made it an issue.
Nope.
I mean, so when we talk about the media not making an issue, let's also recognize what, it's incumbent upon the opponents to make this an issue.
I agree.
I want to switch gears and look ahead. A president is always measured on their first 100 days. He's got 67 days to plan his first 100 days. And my question to you is, what do you think is the issue or issues that he should tackle first?
It's what he said in his acceptance speech. I think the infrastructure thing is a huge one because it's going to get people working again. Right. It's a way to get union members excited. It's a good way to get anybody who uses public transportation excited. I think that's a big part of it. And fixing Obamacare is the other piece.
What do you think? I'm going to go back and forth.
A jobs bill. That's number one and number
two. Above and beyond the infrastructure?
No, well, that's part of the
infrastructure.
Right, sure. It'll be a jobs bill.
Chris Roebling.
I think jobs and taxes.
Yeah, I think jobs, but he has to tackle Obamacare because the Republicans in Congress will insist that he do something to repeal Obamacare, and yet a couple days after he was elected, a couple days after he was elected, there, I said it. He was already backtracking on repealing Obamacare.
That's not true. That's not true.
Is
false.
It is totally true.
You know, David, when you say this stuff, it is just false.
You criticize the media because they quoted Trump's words against him. Now you're criticizing me because I'm quoting Trump's words against him.
You're not. It is exactly
what he said. He said Obamacare, there's a lot of good things about Obamacare.
Right.
And that
repeal and replace includes, repeal and replace since Paul Ryan did his better way with 235 members of the United States House of Representatives. They have included the ban on
pre-existing conditions.
The pre-existing conditions and the kids staying to 26 and a couple other technical elements of Obamacare.
And good luck doing it without a mandate.
Those are
the economics don't work.
Gentlemen, 300 days from today, will we be talking about a smooth relationship between the president and Republican leaders of Congress, including the Speaker, or will we be talking about a rocky relationship?
Nick? Yes, I think we will talk about a smooth relationship between Trump and the Republican leadership because the guy does deals. But you have to, in deal making, you have to have somebody who's willing to make a deal. Ryan is going to be willing to make a deal. McConnell is going to be willing to make a deal. The question is, will Nancy Pelosi be willing to make a deal?
Will Chuck Schumer be willing to make a deal? Democrats in the Senate that may be more willing to make a deal than some of the Republicans? Because I look at that Republican list in the Republican cloakroom. I see a lot of people that despise the President of the United States that have publicly said they didn't even vote for him.
They despise him, but how he governs is going to be very different. And he sent a signal about that in his acceptance speech. That was a seminal moment.
Michael.
Papoose, you also have to recognize that the Democratic caucus in the Senate, in 2018, you have senators up for re-election, like Heidi Heitkamp from North Dakota, Joe Donnelly from Indiana, Manchin from West Virginia.
Right.
They will very much want to cooperate with our president-elect when he is president.
I would say there's one other issue that might get some coverage. It may not be in the first 100 days, but because it has such strong bipartisan support on all sides, and it's been shelved because of the vitriol that's been going back on the presidential race, and that's criminal justice reform.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that can reach out to a lot of constituents.
I believe that the planning for the first 100 days is much farther along than is the personnel for the new administration.
Oh, sure.
And the planning for the first 100 days is being done principally by Paul Ryan and secondarily by Mitch McConnell with consultation over to
Pence
at the Trump administration. I think what you're going to see is a focus in the first 50 of the first 100 days, so to speak, on areas where there can be or there should be some kind of collaboration with the Democrats.
Because what about the Supreme Court, though? The Supreme
So the Supreme Court is going to go with one of the almost certainly one of those 20 some odd names that right. Trump floated out there during the campaign, all of whom were examined and vetted. And
well, and
so
we're
not
and we are starting. And Nick,
Lindsey Graham,
Nick and I have an announcement. We have an announcement to make that we are starting tonight on this program a national. We are calling on Anthony Kennedy to step down. But it is time for Anthony Kennedy to return to Sacramento to enjoy his retirement. He's had a wonderful run. It's time for him to go. And, in fact, he might want to take Ruth Bader Ginsburg with him. Now is the time.
David Lundy.
Can we talk about immigration? Because Donald Trump today said he's going to start by deporting 2 to 3 million, 2 to 3 million undocumented immigrants.
The criminals, supposedly, that's what he said.
But he said 2 to 3 million.
Yeah.
And
do you want to keep 2 to 3 million criminals
let him
here?
Finish. Let him finish.
You want the criminals to stay?
Let him finish.
That's the Democratic.
Let him finish.
I love you guys.
Let Dave finish.
Look, fine. If he starts deporting 2 to 3 million, because I don't believe there are 2 to 3 million. No,
exactly.
No,
they don't exist.
There's not
2 to 3 million.
He'll stop when they're finished with
the percentage of immigrants who are criminal is lower than the percentage of Americans. Okay, than Native Americans.
Should they go?
He'll stop when they're done with the criminals.
Criminals, they should be deported, just like they are currently being deported by the guy.
So what is your beef?
Stop interrupting me. By the guy who calls himself or who has been called the deporter in chief. Right. They are being deported. They will be deported. Right. There are not 2 to 3 million of them. And if he tries to deport 2 to 3 million of them, you will have actual riots in the street.
Wait, do we actually believe that there are 2 to 3 million undocumented persons who are criminals?
I have no idea.
It sounds high to me.
But gentlemen,
philosophically, if you have entered the country illegally,
right,
and you have let's put that little.
We're talking about violent criminals.
Can of worms aside.
We're talking about violent criminals.
If you have entered the country illegally,
yes,
and when you come here, you violate another law,
yes,
should you be deported? I want to hear from our Democrats.
Yes, okay, absolutely.
Well, wait a minute. Are we speeding or committing robbery? If we're speeding, no.
If we're committing robbery, violent crime, yes. Drunk driving, is that a violent crime to you? If there's lots of time, I'm good with that. Okay, good. 1-800-723-8029. When we come back, we're going to be talking about one of the leaders of the Trump campaign who was involved with the outreach to the African-American community. Pastor James Davis joins us from Cleveland. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Sundays at 10:30 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. One of the issues that obviously came up during this campaign was the number of times that Donald Trump gave a speech reaching out to African-Americans. There was criticism that perhaps he didn't spend enough time in African-American communities delivering those speeches, but he probably spent more time talking about diversity and the problems of inner cities than certainly any Republican candidate I can remember in the last 50 years. And joining us now to share his sort of thoughts and analysis is James Davis, Pastor James Davis. He was is with New Spirit Revival Center. He joins us from Cleveland, and he was part of the leadership of reaching out to the African-American community in support of Donald Trump. And Pastor Davis, it's nice to have you with us on Beyond the Beltway this evening.
Thanks for having me.
At this particular moment, we know that, Donald Trump, allegedly, according to the statistics, he picked up 10% of the African-American vote, which was better than anyone was projecting, and it was certainly better than what Mitt Romney did. Now that he is the president-elect, the people that you've been reaching out to, African-Americans trying to convince them to give Donald Trump a chance, what does he have to do for them to increase that vote and expand the level of respect that he hopes to have from the black community around the country?
I would say just keep his promise. He had a very good policy speech with regard to the New Deal for black Americans. We had meetings with him from the outset. We were what they call early adopters sometime early last year when he first announced. We put 50 preachers in the room to start, and then we had 100 black pastors. And you can probably remember the earth melting around that why would these guys go and talk to a Republican? Mm-hmm. And we went in that room, and what we heard resonated with us because he was talking about infrastructure rebuilding. He was talking about school choice. Again, all the things that affect us the same way that the majority is affected. And that's the thing that offends some of us, that we're always reduced to a subset, as it were, that there has to be some sort of plan just for African-Americans versus the plan that he's made for all of Americans. But specifically, he has reached out to us, unlike any Republican. I've been a lifelong conservative myself, but I'm that anomaly. I'm that aberration, as it were.
I mentioned just a few moments to our guests in Chicago, Pastor, looking ahead to the first 100 days, is there something that will be done in the first 100 days that you think will be a part of keeping that promise?
I believe so. Again, he's talking about launching this infrastructure plan in a hurry. And if that happens, that is going to affect inner cities more than any other place in the country. Even though rural America came out and the so-called flyover country, when you start talking about infrastructure and bridges and such, it's going to put our people back to work. And I think what black Americans want to see more than anything are jobs in our community. If he does that, then we're on our way.
Pastor, during this campaign, Donald Trump has been called a racist by a variety of people. Sometimes it's been a knee-jerk reaction. And there's also been a lot of coverage the association, alleged association with the Ku Klux Klan, the supportive rally that took place in North Carolina last week, sort of celebrating the Trump election. As an African American, how do you respond to those that view Donald Trump in such a completely different way than you do?
Well, again, the way I respond to them is to continue to try and educate where I can, because I believe that it is the biggest hoodwink and brainwashing and witchcraft of the media. I use this example. It's like a Christmas gift in birthday paper wrapping, so to speak. They've wrapped this racist thing around him. But when you listen to what he says and listen and look at what he's done, he's not a racist. But if the media keeps painting him in that light, and I believe that the war is on, they're not just going to go away quietly. They're going to continue to march this mantra into the minds of black folks. And so it's my job as a leader in my community, and people respect what I say. And there are those, if 10% came out, that's record breaking. And if we continue to march and continue to say what needs, when I say march, I mean, continue to say what needs to be said. I believe that others will begin to follow. The plantation
Michael
doors are open.
Michael Bauer is a Democrat. He has a question for you, Pastor.
This is Michael Bauer. I live in the city of Chicago. As I'm sure you know, the city has been racked by a tremendous amount of gun violence over the last year, much of it black-on-black violence. And our local officials seem to be unable in any way to cope with this or to reduce this. Do you think there's anything that the Trump administration could or will be doing that could deal with this issue?
If he pulls people onto his team like Giuliani, that's been, you know, involved in the campaign, people that can extend the expertise with respect to how to police this, in addition to the words necessary that need to be said, I don't see the present administration coming out to admonish the community to come into Chicago and say, knock this off and sit with the leaders, get with the mayor and figure out what can you do to get your arms around it? Because, you know, looking at it from the outside, you have complete chaos. And unless you get the leaders.
Pastor Donald Trump said that he would do it almost immediately. He said to the people that live in the crime infested areas of Chicago that he could do it quickly, that he talked to Chicago police people. I mean, isn't this going to be one of the, again, from your perspective, isn't this going to be one of those things that Donald Trump's going to have to deliver on? And you've got to sort of keep the heat on him.
Yes, we have to keep the gas pedal down on him. I believe this is one of the things in the first 100-day list. And as long as he is able to extend his voice and the expertise of the people around him, because I don't want to, I think everybody's looking to him to be the savior of everything and everyone. But at the end of the day, as long as he puts the proper leadership in place and gets his arm around this, because to me it sounds like it's a policing issue. And if that policing issue gets dealt with, then Chicago is going to be a different place.
Nick Kamm.
Yes, Pastor, a question for you. A lot of media have focused very heavily on some of the racist and other outrageous statements that some Trump supporters have been doing since the election. You know, swastikas on walls and protests and so forth. How important do you think it is for President-elect Trump now to speak out and decry and denounce those racists that may have been supporting him and contributed to his victory?
It's extremely important for him to continue in that vein. But one thing also, after he's done, I know that he has done it in times past, but it's many times ignored. With the whole Jake Tapper thing, he completely denounced the KKK. And you can't control who follows you or who supports you, but he has to be vocal about it a few times. But then he has to go above the fray and lead the country. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, I'm not certain how influential the groups like the Klan are. I mean, it's reduced to 8 guys in their living room, their focus group. You only hear about them when it's election time. I mean, how much influence do they have on society? There's some people that are ignorant to me that need to be ignored in some cases, but it seems like the media, again, gives them the microphone, they give them the press, they give them what's, as it were, a bullhorn to spout their ignorance.
Chris Roebling is a Republican and a commentator for WGN Television.
Pastor Davis, good to speak with you this evening. I want to ask you about school choice. In his Gettysburg speech, Donald Trump said that the School Choice Act would be one of his first 100-day legislative priorities. And I want to ask you about your view of the role of school choice and education reform as a method for Republicans and for society to really remediate some of the difficulties that we've seen in inner city neighborhoods, whether they're black or any other group around the country.
I think this is the bellwether. This is the thing that will change our community, because what you earn determines where you live, and where you live determines where your children go to school. And not having the choice of where those children go to school is the cause of generational poverty in our community. And so now that it is his intention to put school choice in the hand of those parents and pull it out of just geographics or zip code, I believe this is paramount. If I was still, my children are grown now, but if I was in that position, this is something that I would certainly be looking forward to, so that, again, it has a generational effect, not just 4 years, not just 8 years, but there's a generational effect to me being able to choose the school that our children go to.
By being an African-American and a conservative and a Republican and embracing Donald Trump when you did, I'm sure you've taken a lot of heat from other African-Americans. What was it about Donald Trump that made you say, I'm willing to go through an awful lot of you-know-what if I stand up for this guy?
Well, you know what? It was the Republic was at stake, the way I see it. I know that may sound very lofty and crazy, but, you know, a little bit overreaching. But at the end of the day, when I looked at the choices, we were willing to engage and, again, take the crap, that a whole lot of it that we got. I mean, there were a lot of unintended consequences of supporting him, including church members that left because of the bullying from their families and from people that are in the community. But we stood by that simply because he was an outsider. That was what was paramount to us. He was somebody that was an establishment. Me being a Republican, you know, you're looking at my guy was Christie just in my head when before last July. And as such, because I wanted someone that was an executive versus a lawmaker. And then so when this executive came along, it gave me an excitement that went all the way back to 1992 with Ross Perot, because that was when I really got excited about the election process. And I hadn't been as excited since him, because, again, it was someone that was on the outside that was looking at going in as a wrecking ball and tearing down some of these establishment ideas and the strongholds that have kept the country stagnant. And so in that regard, you're willing to just take it. We took it, and now we stand here with the president-elect.
Pastor, listen, thank you very much for joining us tonight. This is a very key issue. We would like to have you and invite you back from time to time to give a report and get your report card on how President Trump is delivering on his promise to African Americans. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Dave Lundy, you didn't have a question for the pastor, but let me ask the broader question. Again, we should mention for those around the country, we do this show from Chicago. We try not to bring Chicago too much into the conversation, but the violence in Chicago is now a national story. Everybody knows about it. The demonstrations at Trump Tower in Chicago, which literally is right outside our doors, are where we do this broadcast. So there's national things that happen around us. Do you think there's an opportunity for President Trump, and should President Trump, in that first 100 days, should he do something to try to demonstrate that he cares about the inner cities in Chicago and violence? Because he put that story on the front burner during this campaign. He said more things, there was more outreach in trying to get African-American votes. Should he be doing anything to prove that that was not just campaign BS?
Well, of course he should. I mean, there are lots of things some lip service. I don't anticipate anything significant on that front. I mean, frankly, and I will say this, even as I say that, I want to say in his defense, this is a man who does not like to study historically. And I'm not saying this critically. Everybody around him, his biographer, everybody said this. He does not like to study.
They said about Reagan, too.
No. This is not Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was a governor. Yeah. This man, and you saw this in the look in his face in those press events when he came to Washington and met with Barack Obama, and more than any recent winning candidate, he's overwhelmed by what he is going to face. This is going to be unlike anything he's experienced in his life. And so if he doesn't get to that in the first 100 days, I wouldn't be surprised.
Everybody,
and I wouldn't condemn him for it.
But, Dave, everybody has underestimated Trump since he came down that escalator in Trump Tower. Everybody has. They underestimated him about being able to compete against 16 other Republicans. They underestimated his ability to manage a successful convention, to run a successful campaign. And every underestimation has blown up in the critics' and skeptics' face.
I want to ask you the same, the Republicans the same question. If Donald Trump were to focus on trying to follow through on some of the things that he talked about by reaching out to the African American community in one of the bluest cities in one of the bluest states and trying to stop the violent epidemic of crime we have in the Chicago, would that be a good investment, and would that send a completely different signal as to who this guy is?
It would be.
And do you think he would?
It would be a good thing. I don't know whether he'll do it in Chicago because of how much Chicago has so significantly repudiated Trump. The statements from Rahm Emanuel, the tearing down of the honorary sign. Other inner cities, maybe. I don't know that he'll do it here.
I would say that would prove that he's a bigger man. Chris Roebling, your response.
I think that Trump has an opportunity to make new inroads into many communities. And I think one of them is the African-American community. And I think Chicago is an extremely difficult place in which to do so. I think that he ought to be that's why I asked the question of the pastor about school choice. Because one of the – in my theory of the Democratic Party, it became – more concerned about the teachers' union than it was about the parents. And that's why we are supporting teachers' union and all that they want, and we're still giving lousy schools to the parents. And the people who have paid the price, as we heard from the pastor, Davis, are the folks with the least ability to make their own choices about where to send their kids.
That is, I think you're absolutely hit the nail on the head. What concerned me a little bit about the response to the first question was he looked at it, at the problems in the black community, as a policing issue, and it is to some extent. That's not the real root of the problem in the black community. It is education.
No, and he's talked about jobs.
He has talked about
families.
But again, the pastor talked about policing and Rudy Giuliani. I'm not so sure that policing and Rudy Giuliani
it's a combination
done.
Of things. It's jobs, it's families, it's infrastructure, and yes, it's
education.
And education and crime control.
Michael Bauer, to you. You are a proud gay American.
Yes.
You've been a major fundraiser for the Democratic Party for a long time.
Yes.
The gay community has not been supportive of Donald Trump.
Correct.
Do you believe that there is any opportunity at all? I mean, they had a love affair with Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Is there anything that Donald Trump can say or do that would increase that support? Are there things that he has to do to demonstrate, especially with a vice president who has a reputation as being anti-gay? You can agree or disagree with that.
Well, I'm not only going to disagree. I'm going to tell you that the vice president elect. Mike Pence has historically taken some very, very virulent anti-gay positions, including as the governor of Indiana. So it's not reputed. As far as the president-elect, one of the things he will face when he becomes president is dealing with an executive order that Barack Obama signed prohibiting federal contractors from discriminating in employment based on sexual orientation. Now, Donald Trump has said he's going to repeal or revoke every single executive order that Barack Obama signed.
I don't think he said every single one.
We'll see what he does with this executive order, whether he maintains it or repeals it.
Is there any basis, is there any sort of list of lawsuits from New York City where gay employees of the Trump Organization sued Donald Trump? I think the answer
is not that I know of any evidence of intolerance by Donald Trump towards gays. You know, if you really think about Donald Trump during his campaign, and I said this a lot, the one group he never vilified was the LGBT community.
Right.
Absolutely. And I assume
he held up an LGBT flag.
Well, and I assume part of the reason was, first of all, his mentor in learning about New York City
was Ray Cohn.
Roy Cohn, who is gay, and sadly eventually died of AIDS. But he was exposed to Roy Cohn, and eventually he had a partner. And I assume living in New York, you know, Donald Trump is used to dealing with LGBT people.
He says he doesn't care.
So we'll see how he operates.
Is there a role, Peter Thiel, the founder of PayPal, who addressed the Republican convention? And admit first openly gay. Is there a role, you think, for Peter Thiel in this administration?
Well, I think that's going to be a very interesting issue, whether Peter Thiel comes into the administration because he is an openly gay man.
Michael Bauer, David Lundy, Nick Kalm, Chris Roebling, thank you all. We have so much to talk about. not only with 67 more days to go before the change in administration, but for the next 4 years, the country will change. It was a pretty dramatic election last Tuesday. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amling's now at 888-880-TREE.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels. Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Sundays at 10:30 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
Experience more history at museum.tv.